Okay, so today we're going to talk about graph mining. As I said before, we'll start with this one. Okay, as I said before, it is actually interesting to also look at the macro overview, macroscopic view of the social network. Okay. And one of the examples is this. And we're going to give you the project requirement and specification very soon, okay? But I want you to begin to think about it. One of the things that you could do is really to analyze a social network that you pick, okay? Whether that will be, say, for example, organization or COHK, whether it's the university structure or there is a department structure, right? It'll be interesting to find out, for example, in our department, you know, who works with whom and what, and so on and so forth. So you could just pick that, okay, as your project and do an analysis on it. And you could actually apply the thing that we talk about, the definitions that we give you, you know, who are the bridges? You know, what is the centrality? Who is actually important in this organization, right? And these things will be very, very interesting to find out. And I have no problem if you want to pick one up on Hong Kong government. You're going to, for example, or the temporal transition. Because let's think about this internet, right? What is internet? You know what internet is, but can you give me some characteristic about the internet that makes it interesting, okay? First of all, internet is large, huge. There's so much information there that I don't think that anybody could actually absorb at you know, his life, her lifetime, period, right? What other characteristic about internet that could be interesting? What do you think? It's increasing. So what does that mean? That means it's dynamic, right? You take some snapshot today, it's not going to be the same tomorrow. Links died out, links get put in, okay? Server temporarily out of service and a few minutes later back on, okay? Some sites are permanently gone, and sites get modified, revised, updated, you know, and so on and so forth, right? So this is actually dynamic. It is much more just like a society, exactly more like the society, right? It's increasing. It has lots of information. It has this dynamic things. What else about internet? Now, if it's just like society, what aspect of society there can we talk about? So you have large volume. It has temporal. It's dynamic. What is another characteristic? What do you think? Any other characteristic? What do you think? Is what? Fast, okay? Information propagation is fast, right? Before, you know, you write letters, it takes days, not months, right? Right now, Twitter and all those things, something can happen instantly, and you can know instantly what is going on. So you have these things. Anything else? What about the information itself? Can you say something about the information itself? What do you think? Free. I like that word, right? Lots of information are free. Actually, this is really bad because in the sense that, you know, a lot of things are free, but it doesn't not necessarily mean legal, right? So there are a lot of free stuff on the internet. You could practically get, you know, everything imaginable that you cannot get before, okay? I know that you could actually go to the library, look at books, electronic books. In fact, you could probably download them, you know? And how does that work, you know? I heard the story that Microsoft was, well, maybe not Microsoft, but some company were giving out software and let them duplicate itself, right? So they get on the P2P network, let them replicate itself to copy. But they give a little bit of a, some feature were maybe missing, there's something that is a little bit wrong. So that they will use it, and they like it, and they will have to buy the real software, you know? And even like music, I know that you guys download lots of music, right? And what happened, I think the strategy they're doing is this. They actually give you a copy, but at a very low resolution, or the low quality, or there's something wrong inside the track, right? So you listen to it, it's okay. If you understand it, it's okay. But for some people, it's too much irritation. it forces them to buy the real thing. Okay? So it's free. I like that word. But tell me, are free things actually good things? Are free things good things? What do you think of the quality of information on the internet? Okay? Internet is very interesting. I'm going to show you a Google thing just a little bit later, okay, that deals with this particular thing. When I get more people in, then I'll do that, okay? What happened is this, and it is true. Did you realize that once you get onto Google's search engine, it's hard to get out? Do you know how to get out of Google's search engine? Do you know how to manipulate ranking? Positively and negatively? Did you realize that false information, once it's on the internet, is very, very hard to erase? Did you realize that? And the rumor, as well as real facts, propagate equally fast. Did you realize that? Right? We talk about these things, right? So this is something that is very, very interesting about the internet. This, because this is really, if you think about it, this is social computing. Because this is what society is like. It's a reflection of who we are and what we do and so on and so forth. And that's why we're going to talk about how to do all these things. Okay? Now, earlier we talked about graph mining. Okay, so graph mining is really from a macroscopic view. Can you actually get some of the things? Now, earlier we already talked about, like yesterday, we talked about how do you find cliques? How do you find clans? How do you find clubs? How do you find structure, repeated pattern with structures within this graph? And that's actually quite interesting, right? We didn't talk much about the computational aspect, and I'm not going to do that because I want to give you an overview of what all the social computing is. But definitely, that's another project that you could consider. Is to, if you're interested in graph algorithm theory, you could actually take some of the definition I have for you, right? You could do it two ways. One way is to do a deep study. That means you take one algorithm, for example, finding out bridge or finding out, you know, cuts, right? Implement it and do a very, very in-depth study about that. Can you improve it? Can you tell me everything about it? What is the ordering? Or the complexity of the algorithm. Can you improve it? Can you implement it in three different languages? Can you tell me the background about that? So you could focus on one algorithm, but in depth. Or what you could do is you could contribute by doing a whole series of toolboxes, right? In Python or in C or C++ with Java. So you implement most of the definition that I have. So I give you, given that, I give you an adjacency graph, for example, right? Here are 10 functions that I have implemented. Okay, they may not be perfect, they may not be the best, but they exist an algorithm. Whether brute force or not, it's okay, right? They exist an algorithm. And by the way, you don't have to implement. You can actually collect, okay? Your job is to actually collect and make sure that all the toolboxes actually are consistent, are using the same input and so on and so forth. Right, so that's actually another potential project for you to do. Okay, so I give you actually three different types of project that I'm looking for. The first one is to analyze a social network. Right, you take your government, university, department, student body, whatever, something that is interesting. Don't just do a three people social network. That's not interesting, right? But get it maybe about on the order of hundreds. Okay, then you could actually see. Now, some of these things, for example, they analyze Shakespeare, right? Shakespeare has play, right? They analyze that. Or somebody could pick, say, Bible, okay? There are lots of names, right? Bible has lots of names. Bible has genealogy, right? Can we actually have a social network about that? Yes, right? Then you could actually do apply what we have and work with another group to say, hey, can I get your algorithm, you know, how to find out all these things, min cut, bridge, centrality, and so on and so forth, and say, hey, can you I'm going to analyze the social network, but can I use your algorithm to actually apply to what I'm doing, right? So I'm trying to give you some idea of what I'm looking for, okay? Things about web intelligence, things about social networks, things about graph theory or graph mining stuff, they're all okay. Everything that we talk about in this class. You want to do recommender system? Fantastic. Okay, I'm going to show you what a recommender system is. But if you are interested, you want to do something, come talk to me. Okay, I could give you some projects on recommender systems. That's a very, very hot topic because if you're interested, I have actually a couple students. One student who has actually worked with Redmond 2 summers, consecutive summers, last summer and this previous summer. Okay? Trust me, you don't get to go to Redmond. If you go there once, it's already an honor. But he went twice. And he's probably the only person in Asia who actually has gone there 2 times in a row. Okay? And your job prospect will be very, very good. All these big companies, you know, they might be looking out for you. So there are actually a lot of good prospects in these things. Okay, so the question that we'd like to ask in this graph mining is this: how does any network look like? The visualization of the relationship, for example. Oh, another thing is that if you want to do visualization, that's also okay too. Okay, so you might be working with another group who actually will crawl the data and do that, and then you just focus on visualization. Now, there are a lot of visualization tools. So I don't foresee that you could create your own, but if you do, that will be fine too. So tools to visualize these kind of network is also fine. Or even better, okay, I'm going to show you some of the things. Mathematica has beautiful graphics. Mathematica. If you want to develop a whole series of tools that we talk about in here, perfectly fine. And I'm going to show you a little bit later on. Okay? So how does the network look like, the visualization of the relationship? Okay? And once we could characterize something, maybe we could explore, and we could mimic, and then we could synthesize artificial network that we could use to do our testing and so on and so forth. Okay? So, yesterday I asked you to say, hey, if you're looking at the web, right, what is the web? How can we actually construct a network that is similar to the web? Before we even ask that question, maybe what we should ask is what? What does the web look like? That's the first question. How can we analyze the web so that we actually get those characteristics out, right? And then so that we can generate these things, okay? I'm going to show you several ways. One way is to obviously to do a random graph. What is random graph? Okay, a random graph is graph generated by some random process. It's a random stochastic process, or in this case, by some probability, right? A random graph is obtained by starting with a set of n vertices. So you begin with spread out n vertices right there, okay, and adding edges between them at random. How many edges can you add, given n? How many edges? Well, we all know a complete graph is n times n minus 1 divided by 2 for undirected thing, right? So you have at least approximately n square edges that you could add at any point, right? If this is a purely random graph, the probability will be 1 over that number, right? I could add edges anywhere. Is the internet like that? It turns out it's not like that. You typically, when you add a page, you typically are not done in isolation, right? When you write a web page, you don't randomly link your link to some random page out there, right? When you do something, it's typically probably hierarchical. Think about how you do your web pages. When you create a web page, right? Typically, if you want to do a whole project, then we'll create a head page first. Then you will create supporting pages, right? And those supporting pages is most likely linked up by either home, up, next, previous, in that same level, or up or down, right? Think about it. You don't create a page and just say, I think I want to do a random page today. I'm going to just link up to some random URLs in the web, right? You don't do that, right? So although this random graph is a good way to generate the graph, it turns out that it does not necessarily so mimic the internet. But it can be used for something else. But let's go on, okay? So right here, then, the different random graph model produces different probability distribution on the graph. Now the Erdo-Renyi model, okay, denoted by this G of NP, generates a random graph by having every possible edge occurs independently with probability P. So that's the one, okay? So another model, G of NM, assigns equal probability to all graph with exactly N edges. Okay, so what's the difference between these two? What is the difference between the Erdos-Renyi model, okay? Generate a random graph by having every possible edge occur independently with a probability P. What does that mean? Another model, this looks similar, doesn't it? What's the difference? Another model assigns equal probability to all graph with exactly M edges. What's the difference? What's the difference? Okay. I'm going to show you something. Okay, I'm going to show you something from too many things open, so let me just close some of these things. Okay. Okay, so here's Mathematica. Player, okay? You don't have to purchase Mathematica, but you can download the player, okay? And there are tons of things for you to actually play around with, okay? And these are free, by the way. So this is what I'm trying to say, is that it would be nice to actually be able to generate a whole set of these things, okay? So you're able to actually do this. You could have 2 or 4, 2 by 2, 3 by 3, and look at different ways that you could generate actually random graph. And here, what you could do is, let's go back 2 by 2, okay? And these things, actually, you could generate nodes that point to itself, okay, in this particular instance. So these are some of the random graphs, okay? So what you could do is increase the nodes, for example, right here, right? Lots of nodes, okay? And then you could say the average edge per node. So I could say average, this is actually average. I could really move it down, yeah, and you can see, you see that? If I move it down, what's happening? The average edge per node is 0.85, right? And you can see that these actually become lots and lots of components. This is almost probably like the old days, you know, when society were pretty isolated and so on and so forth. And I would say that this is most likely, this is probably like current days, modern days, where you have different ways to connect, right? So you have a range of different things right here. And then you can actually have random choices. And you can have lots and lots of random choices right here versus this, okay? And you might see that that's not so much different. But in fact, I think that it will make a difference if you have, let me see this. This is highly connected. Oh yeah, because everybody is almost connected to everybody. So this is not a, I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. Okay, something like this. Okay, anyway, these are some of the graphs that you could actually generate by using some kind of parameters right there, right? And so this is only one of them. And let's take a look at some of the ones. So this is one. Oh, yeah, I'll come back to this one too. Just a second. And then... Okay, so this is also, it's similar to the other one, but I want you to beginning to notice something too. Here are different notes, okay? I could have 1,000 notes, but you know what? It doesn't really matter because if the number of edges is only 10, you can only have this many connections. Does it make sense? It does make sense, right? So I could have 600 something, I could have 300. So I got 50. Okay, so 50, 10 edges. So it's about, you know, 1/5, right? So 10 edges with 50 of notes, right? But look at this. Very quickly, that will saturate the network. Okay, so let's increase this to, say, 300. Okay. Okay, you can see that pattern actually emerges. Okay, suddenly, boom, things happen. Okay, and this actually mimics more interestingly like an internet, because we tend to create pages that attach itself to some kind of network. You don't create individual pages that goes nowhere, that randomly connects to somebody, right? So things actually, organization and structure actually emerge, okay, from these things. Very important. Okay, so what is really nice about this is that the C actually don't change much. You can see that it changes a little bit. It depends on what is the initial condition and so on and so forth. So in this one, for example, you can see that actually a couple of them are beginning to form, and some of them are still, you know, left it out there. Now, if you do the stats, okay, let's assume that these are parameter you can set. Right? Once you set them, okay, you do this. How can you actually sure that this kind of graph actually is very similar to the internet? How do you do it? Right? So in some ways, you kind of do a statistic backwards. So you look at the internet, you do some statistic, okay? I'll come to that a little bit later. But I just want to show you, this is the way that you could generate random graph, okay? At least one way. And what is this distribution? Anybody? I'll come back to that. This looks like some kind of power law. Okay, that we're gonna come. Just a second. So again, this is a potential project, okay? It's for you to visualize using Mathematica. And we have copies of Mathematica, so you don't need to purchase anything. You just need to actually come out with these kind of interesting illustrations. Let's put it this way. Okay? So that's another possibility. Okay, so this, the ERDO model is one of the two models. In this model, okay, this is the second model. Okay, a graph is chosen uniformly at random from the collection of all possible graphs, having n nodes and m edges. So it's a little bit different. This one is saying that given that this and this, how many possibilities are there? The possibility of choosing one instance of that kind of graph is equally probable. Whereas this one, the GMP model, graph is thought to be constructed by connecting nodes randomly. It's a little different. This one, it's probably maybe a little bit more, the way that you think of it is that this one, you might generate all possible instances of the graph, right? If you could generate 1,000, that the probability of selecting one is 1/1,000, okay? So this one's a little bit comprehensive in the sense that it's macro. I mean, you really have to generate all this thing. I mean, there are ways to obviously do a little bit differently, but you think of all the possible instances of, you know, M and M, okay, and you select one of them. Whereas this one, you just randomly connect the two. Okay, so there are possibility that those nodes are actually done it, connected over already. So what do you need to do? You need to do something else. Okay. So some observation. When MP, if we're talking about this one, this is our ERDO model right here. Okay, the ERDO model. If MP is less than one, the graph will almost surely have no connected component of size larger than this. Okay, so these are just observation. It's actually very interesting that mathematically you could actually tune these, and these structure properties will occur. Okay, so can we ask for internet? Is internet less than one, equal to one, or is something else? Right? Because if this is a theoretical proof, say MP is less than one, then if you use this model, then it will be less than. There will be no connected component of size greater than this. Is that internet? Is that your social network? Is that someone's social network? Okay. If MP is equal to one, the graph in the GMP will almost surely have largest component whose size is the order of n two-thirds. And you are going like, that's amazing. How did they do that? Well, these are all proven mathematically. Somebody actually have, long before social computing, have studied the graph theory, and actually they studied these kind of obscure, unique problems. Okay? And they came out with all these things. But would it be nice if we could find a social network that could match this? Ooh, that would be your contribution for the class. You know, not all the networks are internet network, by the way. Okay? For example, airport network. Is airport network very similar to internet network? Actually, airport network really doesn't have disconnected component. Think about it. Right? Why would you construct $1 million or something like that because it goes nowhere? It doesn't make sense, right? How about viral network? How about the kinship network? How about a Shakespearean network? Is this similar to internet? Is different than the internet? What is it? Can we parameterize these characteristics for each of the different networks that we talk about, right? We did talk about internet, right? So if NT tends to be a constant, C greater than one, then a graph will almost surely have a unique giant component. This sounds more like an internet, because we do have a big core in the middle. Then you have in and out and so on and so forth. This may be the one. Story continues, right? Anyway, these are some of the things, properties, okay? I'm just showing you here that you could actually do that. What's a scale-free network? Well, scale-free network is a network whose degree distribution follow a power law. It turns out that the internet is a scale-free network because the degree distribution follows a power law. What's a degree distribution? How do you actually calculate degree distribution? Okay? Out degree distribution goes very simply. Every page has a number of out degree, right? Pointing out. So every page, your page, okay? I count maybe 20 out. That's good. I count your page, you have 10. That's good. So what I do is this. I put it in a bin. I put it in a bin, right? For your 20, I put you in the 20 bin. Well, you're the 20, I put it in 20 bin. You're 10, I put it in 10 bin, right? Then I calculate how all the pages, okay? So I have an out degree distribution. Out degree distribution. So what do you think that plot is going to look like? Can someone tell me? Let me say this again, okay? This is a histogram, a simple histogram. So I take a page, okay? I take a page. These are out degree, okay? Out. So I take a page that does this, right? All this thing. And then I map into a histogram, okay? So this is from 0 out degree those pages are just, I see the page there, but it's just information page. It's just a text right there. That's it. Nothing else. To one, maybe next button. Okay, and that's it. Two, three, and so on and so forth. Okay? And these values are what values? The number of pages that contains this. Okay? So tell me, in your mind, if I were to ask you to plot this, what would it look like? Would it be looking like this? Look like this? Looks like this? Looks like this? What would it look like? Tell me your justification. Okay, let's think through it. Justify. So somebody tell me. What?
Normal distribution.
Normal distribution? Okay, so one possibility is a normal distribution. Heck, I don't have a... Oh, I do. Okay, a normal distribution. So you're thinking like, lots of people have a normal distributed like this. Is that right? Most of people have maybe about 20... outlinks, right? And very few have that, and very few have this, right? Not, it's natural, because Gaussian is actually one of the most natural distribution that you can find, okay? Anyone else? Anyone else? Anyone else? What other distribution can you think of, other than Gaussian? If it's a linear, let's just say, if it's linear, do you think it's this way or it's this way? Or it's this way? Could it be this way? Or is it this way? Or is it this way? Tell me, this way doesn't seem to be likely. Why? 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 That says that you have more people writing a lot more out degrees, right? That doesn't make sense, does it? Do you actually see a lot of pages, lots and lots of pages that have lots and lots of out degrees? Probably not. And this one doesn't really make sense either, right? That means that equal number of people have different, various out degrees. Does it make sense? Okay, so maybe it's like this. Does it make sense? So lots of people will have small degrees, and then few people will have lots and lots of links going out. Okay, so maybe something like this. Maybe. I'm not saying it is. Okay? Does it make sense? Okay? So if it's like this or it's like this, now which one is correct? Okay. Well, it's very interesting. Whose degree did you follow a power law? So you kind of actually know that. What is a power law? At least asymptotically, as a fraction of pk of nodes, this. Okay, so power law basically is defined by this. Here's the power law. Y is equal to cx raised to gamma minus gamma. That's a power law. And that gamma is usually between 2 or 3. Okay? So what is this, if you plot this out? What does that look like? It is not a Gaussian, unfortunately. It is not a linear, but it looks something like what? Like this. Okay? And I think this is actually how they did it was, on the log-log scale, if it's a power, what is it on the log-log scale? It's linear, right? Okay, so let's go back slowly. If I take the log here, right, I will just have this thing in front times a constant. So that is a linear, right? If I take the log of this, right? And it's negative, the slope, right? So it's going to be like this. So in the log graph, this plot will be a linear plot. But on the regular graph, it actually will go drop off like a power, like that. Does it make sense? Okay? This, in fact, is very interesting. It tells us a lot of things. It tells us, first of all, there are a lot of people have only few degrees, and very few people have many, many degrees goes out. That's one thing. Second thing, it turns out that this log normal thing is also an internet phenomenon. Another phenomenon of this is that if you look at the sales for Amazon, right? Amazon sells all sorts of things, right? Okay, all sorts of things. What is their distribution of their sale items? You go, that's interesting. You know, if you go back, you might say, oh, it's this. There's some items I actually sell a lot and some of them don't, right? And so on and so on. Or you can say, oh, everything item is sold equally. That's impossible. It's the same as that log tail. It's a long tail. It's got a long tail. Okay? It's actually log normal. And you plot it in the log graph, it's linear. What that means is this. Okay, it looks something like this. What that means is this. There are few items that Amazon sells. They are very popular. They sold a lot. But there are many items, like from here and onwards, many items that they don't sell a lot. But where does Amazon make their money? They make their money actually in this area. Why? Because if you integrate this, okay, they actually have higher profit here than competing with all other people selling the same items at this level. Okay? You could sell a lot, but your profit margin actually is not very high right here. Whereas your profit margin is very relatively high in the long tail, right? Amazon is able to actually reach a lot more people selling a lot more items. You know, before when you go into a store, you got to physically buy stuff, right? You had to physically buy stuff. I mean, food and supermarket is still the old business because you got to buy food. You got to take that thing home, right? But a lot of things on Amazon, they ship it to you. You don't have to see it because it's standard, right? So Amazon actually using this kind of model that these, they were never ever going to sell. Who's going to go to, say, supermarket and buy just one item? Special item. That's it. Okay? No. And the supermarket cannot stock all the possible items. So they have to do it here. Right? But think about this long tail. And this is exactly what we have here. Okay. So this is actually the power law. Okay. So a scale free is a network whose degree distribution, so this is degree, the distribution. The in, what about the in? In is similar. But I think it's actually even less like a this. The out degree is more follow this, okay? And other nodes goes for a larger value, k. So it's k raised to the gamma, where gamma is constant. Oh, this is what I said. And gamma is typically in the range of 2 to 3. Okay? So if you plot a log graph, what is the slope? What does that do? What is the slope? The slope will be this, right? Gamma. So if a higher slope, what does that mean? What does that mean? If it's higher, is the gamma is higher. What does that mean? Is it steeper? It is steeper, right? 2 is like this, 3 is like this, right? Okay? So when you actually have, if you make this thing to be very high, 10, whatever, you're getting almost a straight line. And what does that mean? That means that a lot more people actually will be here, and this thing actually gets smaller and smaller. Much smaller. Okay? So that's what it means. And that's what we observe when we actually plot these things out. So when we plot, these are 4 different things. These are Intel. These are what the, I'm sorry, not Intel, Internet router connections, basically. Okay, so this is a little bit from different from the web. The web, it's kind of a structure on top of internet, right? You guys all know. Okay, internet and web, they're two different things, right? Internet is really the hard wire connection. Okay, whereas the web, you could have ISP that hosts so many things, right? That go through that. So this was an internet connection in November 97, December 98, April 98. Okay, so they look at that, and guess what? It really follows this thing. So if you look at the number of connections to that particular node, right here, the out degree connecting to that, and the number of those routers, you will see that there only one router, so on and so forth, will connect to, say, 10,000 and things like that. But there are many, many right here that connects to, 1,000 of them connects to about 10. Okay, about 10. But there are only one and few that connects 1,000, about 2,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, and so on. Okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? Okay. Okay, so why is this important? Okay, so why is this important? And, so this is the power law exponent, a random variable. Okay, so don't worry about power law distribution are really heavy tail, so that they decay more slowly than exponential or Gaussian. So earlier when we have Gaussian, right, this thing actually flattens out very, very quickly. Whereas power actually, it has a much more longer tail. That's why it's called heavy tail, longer tail, okay? And then the exponential cutoff, so this one, exponential cutoff is really the airport network. Airport network, it really cuts off much faster, right? Much faster. Why? It kind of makes sense because, you know, you only have a few international huge airports, right? Many of these things, local things, they don't fly international. They connect to bigger network. So they attach themselves to some big network, okay? Especially in the U.S., right? U.S., you don't see international airport going flying to, you know, some small town. So they fly to major town, L.A., San Francisco, Seattle, and so on and so forth, East Coast, and so on and so forth, some in the middle, right? So airport then, it drops off very, very quickly, and there's nothing. And the airport doesn't connect to everybody in the world. There's just none like that. So that's what exponential cutoff is, very, very fast. Okay? And then the log-normal is truncated parabola of log-log scales. And then you could also study that too, log-normal. Okay? So here are some examples, some more examples. And this is the exponential distribution and log-normal. So exponential. So we can take a look at this, and we can take a look at this. Okay, so this is the log normal, and what you can do is change that parameter. You can see that things actually do change right here. This is the log normal, and this is the exponential. They are two different kind of a thing. Okay, the exponential actually kept very much similar, okay, right here and here. Okay, the log normal. So you can vary the parameter, and this tells you actually the mean, where this is, and so on and so forth. Okay? So these are some of the things, the visualization tools that you could use to produce that. Okay, so. So again, degree distribution of under record is a plot of the count, that, okay? And then you can have the out degree and in degree. And then what I wanted to find is basically that the out degree is proportional, so it's very much the rank of the node, okay, to the power of a constant R, okay? So the out degree dV of a node is a fraction of the rank of the node, RV, and the rank exponent R as follows, okay? Okay. So this one you don't need to worry too much because, again, mathematicians have run ahead. So giving this, they could actually predict something from that, from those networks. Okay? And one of the projects you could do is to follow upon this and do an analysis with real network and see whether that they actually form this. Okay? So this is a rank plot. So the rank, okay, again. Okay, define our degree and okay, I think this is very, very similar to what we have. And this is our degree plot. Okay. Scree plot right here is not a log, but scree plot, I just want to introduce a little bit, is basically you can see that fall off point, and there's something happening here. Okay, there's something happening here. This is what we call a mountain, and this is what we call a debris. Okay, so where the valley is, I guess. So there's something significant that is happening here. So when you look at a graph, right, there are a couple of things you ask. What are the extreme? Okay, and what are something interesting? And the scree plot, when you plot something, when you see something, there's something happening right here. Then you need to ask yourself, why did this happen? Why is there a certain drop off from a very steep slope to a gentle slope? What is happening right here? Okay, and I'm trying to look for a case where this thing actually happens. But I couldn't find it yet. Okay, so if you could find it, that would be great. If you could actually give me a case that say, hey, something significant is happening. Okay, why is this? Is it natural happening? Okay, there's some limitation so that, you know, this happens, or is some kind of man-made things that cause this very drastic change happening? Yeah, and so on and so forth. Okay, the hop plot is how many hops that you could go from one place to the other. That's how many hops, right? So this is your Gaussian distribution, kind of, okay? And what is interesting is that this is kind of the distance, okay? About, if you want to look at the hop plot, this is kind of the distance for a given particular network. And you can actually look at this and say, oh, okay, so I can see that average 17 hops or whatever you need to take. But then what kind of a network is this? Now, I do have to say, all the statistics are all taken on the, from the macro level. So many statistics can be all hidden underneath. Okay, so this one just gives you the kind of the overall view of that, right? So if this is the hop plot, what would it be the out-degree plot? You know, are there a relationship between the two? Are they associated or they're not associated or they're independent? I could have this kind of hop plot and then I could still have a power law or I have some other distribution. Okay, so these are some of the questions that we do ask. Okay. Let me say something about cluster coefficient. Okay, so in a network then, because we said that random graphs are really not random, especially for internet, because they cluster themselves to some network. Okay, so when you create a new page, you really are clustering that new page to some already well-established network. So then the question then is to ask, what is the clustering coefficient? Okay, of a particular for a particular node. For node V with edges UV and VW, the clustering coefficient of V measures the probability of existence of the third edge UW. Okay, the clustering coefficient of the entire graph is found by averaging over all nodes in the graph. So this is easy, right? You find one, okay, then you find for all. Then you just summing up and divided by n nodes. But how do you actually find one? Okay, so what does this mean? If this is U, V, W, okay, so this is very simple, U, V, W. If it's U, V, V, W, what is the existence of V, W? If it's there already, the clustering coefficient is 1. It's already there, right? If it's just like this, UV, There's nothing here, nothing here. Okay? Okay? In this situation, the Cosine coefficient is 1/3. Because there are three possible connections. Okay? You don't have it. You only have 1/3. Right? So this configuration is really 1/3. Does it make sense? Basically, it's kind of looking at what is the connectivity of a, you know, that cluster. And this one, if you're not connected, your coefficient is 0. Okay? Yes?
Actually, from the second graph, I guess like different edge has different weight. For example, the direct link from the
right.
Right. So how, why do we use just 1/3? I mean, the middle.
Yeah, but this one is actually, what do you call it, it's undirected. Okay, if you want to use it directed, then there you have to come up with another measurement to calculate that. Okay, so for now, these are all undirected graph, for now. Okay, so the way that we calculate is by looking at the possibility and divided by that. Let me give you another example. I think there was another example. So right here, okay, so right here. The node has 6 neighbors. Right, so 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right? If I were to say that this is actually connected to all this, right, how many possibilities do I have? What would that be? 6, pick 2, what would that be? 6, pick 2. 6, pick 2, the reason why is I have all the possibilities 6 pick 2, right? So it will be 6 times phi divided by 2 times 1. 6 phi, 2, 1, then you will have 15. Okay? So 6 has, no A has 6 neighbors. These neighbors could have been connected by 15 edges, right? 15 edges meaning that this, and so on and so forth. Okay? And these, and these, and these, and so on and so forth, right? There's 15 possibilities. But how many edges we have? Okay, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. You only have 5. Okay? So what does that mean? So it's 5 divided by 15, so it's only 1/3. Okay. If this is complete, okay, what would be the clustering coefficient be? 1. Right? If this is totally not connected, then it's 0. Right? Okay? So it's about your neighbor. So let's go back to this graph again, right here. Right? If you have this. Okay? The way that you would calculate it is you calculate, this is the connection already, so you calculate this one, and the neighbor to these two, okay, you already have a connection there. So that's 1. But this is, right? So here's your neighbor, but you're missing this one and this one. Right? So that's 1/3. And then if you're not connected, then obviously this is 0. Okay? And you do that for all the nodes, right? So what I'm trying to say is this. A is this. What is a B? What would a B be? Let's calculate. Is there a simple one? Okay, F is what? If I were to calculate F, F is 1. Okay? E is 1. D? D is what? D is what? 2/3, right? Is it 2/3? Is it 2/3 for D? You have 3. So 2 pick 3 is what? 3 times 2 divided by 2 times 1. There are 3 possibilities. So it's between these two and what? This one. Right? But he doesn't have this one. So what does this mean? It's 2 out of 3. You only have 2 out of 3 connected, right? So this for D is 0.666. two-thirds. Does it make sense? Okay. What about C? C is 1. B is, let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4. So 4 pick 2. 4 times 3 is 6, right? Okay, 6. I have 1 here. I have 2 here. I have 3 here. So it's half. That's all. I'm missing here. I'm missing here. Right? Oh, wait. Am I missing another one? Oh, yeah. CG, you're right. CG, right here. So this is half. Right? So you add all those things up, okay? And then what do you get? Divided by 2, 4, 6, 7. Divided by 7. And that's what you get, this. Okay? So it is fun. Actually, guys, there are a lot of things that you could calculate about a network. You could calculate the cluster coefficient, right? The Reddit algorithm that calculates this. I give you a graph right here, undirected graph. Tell me the cluster coefficient. What is it? What if is high, that means it's what? Closer to a complete graph. What is low is complete to isolated things, right? So you could characterize a social network by doing this. What about clicks? I mean, how many clicks? What is the click number for this one? Anyone? For this one? Okay. It should be no more than what? No more than 6. But it's impossible, right? Not this one. So the next one is what? 4. Is this one. So look at this. Is there a click right there? No. So what is the click for this one? Really 3. Right. Click. So on and so forth. So you can actually do a lot of statistics about what you have. And you could treat a lot of things, right? Because a lot of times friendship is a undirected graph. Your web page is directed graph. I point to you doesn't mean that you point to me. I point to Google. Google doesn't mean that Google point to me. Right? But friendship, on the other hand, is very much like a direct undirected graph. I'm a friend to you. I hope that you say you're a friend to me too. It will be kind of embarrassing to say, oh, he's my friend, but other person say, no, you're not my friend. Right? Okay? So these are some of the things you could do. Okay, so stress plot. Okay, what's a stress plot? Graph partitioning techniques typically breaks the graph into two disjoint partitions or communities. This is almost like the bridge that we talk about, okay? Or whether the min cut, okay, that thing. So the shortest path between all pairs of nodes in a graph, the edge between the stress or stress of an edge is the number of these shortest path. So this is really kind of like a bridge. Right? Is this a bridge? What's the difference between this and the bridge? The bridge was a looser, I guess, a looser definition is any things that actually cut that you could actually break this thing into two disjoint sets. This one has a little bit more. Okay? This one says that all pair of nodes in the graph, the edges between this, or stress of an edge, is the number of these shortest paths that the edge belongs to and is the measure of the low of that bridge. Okay, so I pick any two points. Then this will be n pick 2. There are n of these possibilities. And I look at all the edges there, and I find out they're matching ones. Okay? And then I find out the highest one. And that's the stress of that particular edge, is to count out the number of all those things. Okay? And what does that do? What application can you use this for? Okay? What application should you use this for? Stress. If you're a national security person, what would you say? You say, you better be careful about that bridge, or that segment. I want you to protect it at all costs. Because that's the most effective way for information to flow. If that thing, something goes wrong with that thing, there will be no longer shortest path between many of the two nodes. You have to go somewhere else, right? For national security, you need to protect that. For disease and things like that, what do you need to do? You try to eliminate that person, right? So is it good and bad? You have to do this, okay? Okay, information kind of flow both ways. Disease doesn't flow either way, right? Disease doesn't. I mean, I infect you, it's kind of directed. Okay, think about that. How does disease doesn't, it doesn't come back to me. Yeah, I infect you. But information flow is both ways, undirected. Okay? So this is a stress plot. Okay, this is almost like a redefinition. Okay, but the reason why I need to do a redefinition is because we're introducing labels right now. Okay, so bear with me. The graph is still the same. V and E is exactly the same. Nothing changed, right? But U and mu are different. Okay, mu and nu are different. Okay, mu it denotes the no labeling function, and nu denotes the edge labeling function. So now, on top of the graph, right, I can label the node and the edge the way that I want. So I can label the node using airport thing. I could have many edges because I could say, oh, this flies out. There are many flights between the two cities, for example, or two airports. I could have many, many different edges to represent that. Not just one, many, because there are different flights, right? Like you have flights at 8 a.m., 10 a.m., 12 p.m., noontime, and so on and so forth, then I have many, many different links. I can label these links differently. That's all. So I'm just increasing the complexity a little bit. Okay? So by doing so, then we have this undirected graph. Okay? And nothing tricky here. Okay? So what's a subgraph? Okay? Subgraph is very simple to define. This is just a definition. G1 and G2... be graph, and graph G1 is a subgraph of G2, written subgraph. The subgraph could be the graph itself, okay? It could be graph itself. If V1 is a subset, equal subset to V2, E1 is E2 intercept with V1 cross V1, okay? And then this one and this one is similar, okay? So what does this say? Is that subgraph is interesting? Why is it interesting? Why is it interesting? Many times you want to find a sub-community, either a terrorist or a triad or something, rich people or some interesting phenomena. You really are looking at subgraph. You're really looking at subgraph in a whole big mess of things. Okay? Data mining techniques and things like that, you're looking for a subgraph. Okay? So what are the subgraph algorithm? Okay? Can you actually come up with something if I were to give you G1 and G2, okay? How long would it take you to calculate a subgraph? Whether G1 is a subgraph of G2 or not? How long would that take? Okay, graph G1 is a subgraph of G2. So I give you this, now there are two things, right? I give you this, given a graph, another graph. Can you tell me, is there a function that you can tell me that G1 is a subgraph of G2? Yes? No. If it's yes, can you tell me the second question is, can you tell me how many are there? Because there could be more than one, right? Okay? And it could be actually multiple ones, and it could be it could be a little bit different, okay? But can you tell me a function? Now, obviously, it's computable. Why? Yeah, for finite graph, right, you have finite permutation of the substructure, right? So it's obviously permutable. And obviously, you could do it with brute force, right? So it sure is easy, right? So I get G2, I could generate all the subgraph, all the possible subgraph, then I just do a simple matching. But you and I know that that's not the way to go, because brute force get you someplace, but that's not really the way to go. You really need to come up with a more elegant algorithm to actually could beat this, right? Okay? So that's what we need to do on a computation. So if you want to do a subgraph matching, perfectly fine. Go do it. That's your project. But do a good job on this, right? Okay? Define graph isomorphism. Okay. This is, again, same thing as the old one, so I don't want to elaborate too much time. It's the same thing as the old one. So basically giving you two graphs, right? I'm asking you whether they are the same. They're similar or the same, right? So G1 and G2 a graph isomorphism to G1 is a bijective function. So it's really, they satisfy these three conditions. The edges, the label satisfy, and so on and so forth. So for this one, the only difference is that the label, there are labels that you need to actually match. Okay, more constraints right here. Okay. Okay, this is more interesting now. Defining common subgraph. Now this is a little tougher. Okay? Earlier, I asked you a subgraph within the graph. You say, that's easy. I just enumerate all the things, right? Now this one, you need to enumerate two things and then find out whether that there are structures that are similar. Whoa. Whoa, this is a little tough, right? That means this. I give you G1 and G2. And the question is, are there any subgraph that is common to G1 and also to G2? And what is the maximum of that substructure? Right? I could get you one. It's easy. I can get a triangle. I have three nodes. I can probably find that very fast. But what if that structure is big? Oh, you didn't tell me that it's big, right? So what if this one you want is that the substructure is actually quite large, right? I don't know. So obviously the brute force way to do is do what? You generate all the substructures in G1, you generate all the substructure in G2, and then you do a matching, right? Does it make sense? Make perfect sense, okay? But does it work? Absolutely. Is it good? Absolutely not. Okay, so you need to come up with a better algorithm to do this, right? Okay? So here's some measure, okay? Say some measure. And he maxed out. The distance of this, okay, in maximum common subgraph, the MCS distance, this is the MCS distance, so maximum common subgraph, maximum common of G1 and G2 is equal to 1 minus that, okay? So a small distance, meaning high graph similarity, because it's 1 minus, right? So if they are the same, this becomes 0. The distance becomes 0. That means they're exactly the same graph, right? But you will not use this algorithm to find out whether the two graphs are isomorphic, right? This is a too long a way to find out whether two graphs are the same, okay? But you can use it, because 0 meaning they are the same graph, right? But if it's 1, that means that these graphs are actually totally different. There's no substructure. And then the bigger the substructure, the more tends to be 1, okay? Okay. Edit distance. What is edit distance? You guys all know. You should know what edit distance is.
For example, if you want to modify graph 1 to
graph 2,
how many edges you need to change it, then the final result of graph 1 is the same.
Exactly. So I could give you a string, right? I could string A, B, C, D, right? And I want you to change to the E, F, G, H, right? Then what do you need to do? So you need to say, oh, A changed to E by moving A, B, C, D, E, and so on and so forth. Now I could do that, right? This is a, you could think of this as string 1, this is string 2, right? So if I'm my name is actually in Chinese, is J-I-N-G, Jing, okay? But I became King, right? K-I-N-G, right? So the difference of edit distance is 1. For J to K, that's 1, right? If I change to L, Ling, right? J, K, L, that's 2, right? And then you could do that similar things, right? So the graph here is basically says graph 1 and graph 2 be graphs. And let C be denote the cost of edit path. So if you edit a path, if you change a path from one to another, right? There is a cost to do that. And if this is an edit path from G1 to G2, then the edit distance is defined by the minimum of 1 to m, finding out this cost. Okay? There are many ways to change the thing. And what you want to do is find out the minimum. Now, again, what is the upper bound? Can I do brute force on this? Sure. Right? I could systematically change every single node, the edges in this graph, and then see whether that matches with this, okay? But again, that would be a huge space that you need to search. So perhaps a thing, very typical things that you guys do in ACM is use what? Dynamic programming, okay? So you actually use dynamic programming to do this, okay? So this is another one, define edit distance. Okay, so here's a simple graph edit distance, okay? How about graph support? What's a graph support? Okay, given the label graph data set, G1, G2, Gn, support of G prime is the percentage of graph in D where G prime is a subgraph. This is almost like I'm looking for a frequent set G prime, okay, of in this graph. Okay. So there could be many pocket of things. I'm looking for a structure that is actually common to this. And is this tough? Actually, it's not too tough, right? Because you already have given me how to do the subgraph, looking for subgraph. So if I, the support, oh, actually, no, this is a little bit harder. This is more general, I'm sorry. Because the G prime is not fixed. It's not given. It's not given. Is it given? Let's see, it's not given, right? Oh, no, this is given, I'm sorry. Okay, there is a case that is given, okay? There is a case that is given. That means I give you G prime, right? Tell me what is the support among all these Gs. That's easier. Another thing is given this, right? I generalized to almost the previous problem. Given all these graphs, 100 graphs, can you find out a G prime that maximizes the support? That's tough. I give you 100 graphs out there. Can you find out the largest one that satisfies all this ones, right? So you could go, okay, I pick one and two, I find out the maximum one, but that may not be the one that satisfies all other 98. Does it make sense? So how would you do that? How would you do this? What do you think? Huh? Yeah, but again, this is a very interesting problem, right? In the sense that I could ask you to say, find out really the common family member, like for example, Italian mafia, right? Who are actually the core member among all these organizations? Can we actually trace them? Can we actually find out who are the actually core member in all the social graph, in the business graph, in their tax graph, in their, you know, whatever graph that you guys are looking at? So all these graphs could be different way that they socially connect, their family connect, their business connect, their sport buddies, and so on and so forth. Can we actually find out? Okay, so each of the graph could be different instances of different things. Their email graph, their web browsing graph, their, you know, I can find out different graphs for this thing. And I'm asking, can you give me the biggest support? What is the network that they are actually involved with? That's what this is, right here. Does that make sense? Okay, it's interesting. It's almost like a spy story, right? Okay, let's see. Given the graph G, a subset of vertices is called independent if two vertices I are connected by an edge in E. An independent set is called maximally independent for every vertex in I. Vertex V in I, there is an edge in E that connects V to a vertex in V without I, okay? A maximal independent set is called a maximal independent set, MIS, okay? If I contains as many vertices of V as possible. So what is this independent set? Somebody? Subset I, subset of V, independent set. If no two vertices of I are connected by an edge. So what are these things, independent set? These things are what? Kind of the loose leaves, right? right? So the loose leaves, oh, do I have any loose leaves? I don't even have a loose leaf here. Okay, so loose leaves. Loose leaves could be, you know, things like, you know, you're connected. If it's a star, for example, right? If it's a star, these are basically the independent thing, right? Okay, so because there's no connection between these two, and these two, and these two, and these two, and so on and so forth, right? So when you have a really, so for example, this one's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So this one will be 5. Maximum independent thing, okay? What I'm trying to say is this, there are really a lot of interesting, they're coming from graph theory, that, you know, nobody thought about doing it. I mean, actually, people thought about applying this to social network analysis. By the way, social network analysis is not new. I like to reiterate this point. Sociologists have studied this for many, many years, centuries. Okay? What is new is that we now have a massive, massive thing, and we can mine them, and we can compute them, and they're really algorithms that we need to apply to them. That's all. Okay? Sociologists actually and mathematicians have done their groundbreaking work already. They define these terms. They know the upper bound. They know many, many characteristics, right? But what is missing right now is what? Computational algorithms. Okay? That's where we come in, right? If you go to Google, right? Did you know the computation Google does every day? Do you know how big that is? If they want to invert a matrix and things like that, how many pages are there right now? Billions of pages, right? How do you do that computationally? I'm not talking about mathematics. Mathematics is easy. A, you know, A is equal to, you know, X, B times X. That's it. But how do you get out of the inverse of that matrix? We're not talking about, you know, 10 by 10 matrix. We're talking about huge matrix. How do we do that computationally? Some of these problems are not new. They are already done by mathematicians. But the algorithm to handle massive, dynamic things that we talked about earlier, not there. Okay, this is where we come in. That's why Google actually grew. Why? Why did Google grow? There was Yahoo then. There was Alta Vista then. Why did Google grow so fast?
They have a better search engine.
They were a better search engine, and we're going to do that next week. We're going to tell you why they are a better search engine. Okay? PageRank is one thing. How do you do PageRank? Well, we're going to talk about that next week. But we need to understand, again, the microscopic view, the macroscopic view. Then we talk about how we actually rank information next week. Okay? But before that, actually, okay, so I think I'm more or less done. So, frequent structure, here's a pseudo algorithm that does that, okay? And then the pattern growth, don't worry about this, and G-span. Okay, what I want to do right now is this. Actually, I want to see whether I could... Oh, I wonder, I have it here. Just a second. Okay, I'm going to show you some video. Whoa.
Street in New York City.
Oops, sorry. Okay, this may be a little old. This way.
I have a headache, and I want to know where the nearest pharmacy is. So, I have my phone. I'm going to punch in 46645, which are the numbers that correspond to ZOOCL. The text message I...
This is, sorry, let me just get this thing done. What happened here?
I have a headache, and I want to know where the nearest pharmacy is. So, I have my phone. I'm going to...
Go start from here. Okay. Can you guys hear this? Is this okay?
Has there ever been a brand name like Google?
Whoa, sorry. I moved this.
Brin and co-founder Larry Page working in a converted garage.
Our boardroom table is also our ping pong table, so we've got the net on everything.
The company that began as a school project is now worth more than Ford and General Motors combined. And Brin and Page, barely into their 30s, are worth about $6 billion each.
Okay, so now which camera should we buy?
This is not it, okay? It just so happened that he was on the same.
Corporate giants like L'Oreal, Coca-Cola, and De Beers Diamonds use her picture in their ads. That internet polls and even Julia Roberts have declared her the most beautiful woman in the world. Well, you've probably never heard of her, and tonight may be the first time you'll see her.
Okay, so
I'm Mike Wallace.
I'm Morley Schaefer.
I'm Ed Bradley.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Bob Simon.
I'm Leslie Stahl. Those stories and Andy Rooney tonight on 60 Minutes. Has there ever been a brand name like Google? Non-existent 6 years ago, it's now a global verb, as in, I Googled this, or I Googled that, or I Googled you. To Google, definition, to look anything up on the internet using Google's supercomputer and get an instant answer. The company that began as a school project is now worth about as much as Ford and General Motors combined, thanks to a stock that has roughly doubled in price since it went public last August. And for the first time since, Google has opened its doors to let us Google them.
Here coming around. We have North America.
Oh, look at that. Google co-founder Sergey Brin is showing us an electronic globe that displays the mountains of Google searches happening around the world at any given moment.
So every little dot represents a certain number of searches, but you can see that there are thousands of searches going on in a second. Now you can see Europe.
These are all different languages, right?
Yeah.
All the different colors.
Yeah.
Oh, Europe is really going strong. 200 million times a day, someone somewhere uses Google to search for something on the internet. An old boyfriend, a new boyfriend, a new gadget, a used car, serious, frivolous. Type in Paris Hilton, and Google's computers, roughly 100,000 of them, search the entire internet for every mention of her. 6.5 million, and every picture, 6.5 thousand. Half a second. Looking at the Googleplex, company headquarters in Silicon Valley, it's hard to imagine that just a few years ago, the company basically consisted of the Russian-born Brin and co-founder Larry Page working in a converted garage.
Our boardroom table was also our ping pong table, so we got the net and everything.
And the dress code?
Well, I'm probably a good embarrassment to look at the photos back. I think we were pretty much disheveled students.
A lot of Googlers still look like disheveled students. Inside, the Googleplex feels more like a college dorm than a corporate office. Bikes in the hallways, dogs under the desks, and there's a strong spirit of play. Besides all the ping pong, there's a volleyball game every day at noon.
This is really where we spend the overwhelming majority of our time. And so in order to have a good lifestyle, we had to have a good lifestyle at work, which meant that, you do have lots of sports and things. We have our ski trip.
You together?
The whole company goes on ski trip.
Not anymore.
Still?
Yeah, well, we're going to have to, it's going to be hard this winter, but we're going to try for it.
How many people work here?
It's approaching 3,000.
Whoa. It's going to be a big ski trip. You're going to have your own mountain. Then again, you can afford it.
Well,
Google can afford a lot of things these days, and so can its employees, many of whom had stock options. Something like Google became millionaires when the stock went public, and Brin and Page, barely into their 30s, are worth about $6 billion each.
Okay, so what's